Mate, let's have a chat about Red, another robust quarterly.
Well, I see their debt, like the big overhang and the big risk of the companies. I see them, you know, like accelerating the pay down of that debt as a huge positive. Pantoro there, they've come out today with news that's actually sent the stock up about 15% intraday. Their Norseman Gold Project has produced the highest number of ounces and highest grade profile to date. Remember, there's a term loan of $38 million. Check the annual report. And there's $58 million in trade payables at 30 June. While it's great to see operations improving there, what the market really wants to know, what about the cash? Pantoro report ounces, but they don't tell you the chain of cash.
Righto, buddy miners, a bit going on today. Welcome to the show. Barrick pumping a couple of billion into Zambia. We've got a cover in Strandline Base, Tieto's new mine plan, Pantoro and Red Fives pre-quarterly results. Boys, welcome to your own show, JD Traff.
Bad Thank boy, you. Maddie. Look at that. I
thought, fuck it, I'll mix it up. I've got to get the bloody... There's one for me swear jar, whoever that great land gold Twitter guy was, up me about the swearing. You can... You know what I'm about to say to you. Mixing it up for the Money Miners Travel. Got to wear a black one tomorrow. Boys.
How you going, Matty?
I'm going good, mate. Right, let's get into it. We're just ripping straight into it. The sponsors for today are great friends, my golf partners at JP Search, Michael and Zav. Trav, you're better at articulating what these what these fuckers actually do.
These fuckers. Wow. Well, we'll redact the word fuckers from it because they're not fuckers. They're great people. They're GCs, Matty.
Good fuckers.
GFs. So, mate, I listened to your ad last week and I was like, I think you missed the mark. I'm like, CFOs aren't quite their niche. They do play CFOs, but, you know, that's their bread and butter is the analyst associate gig. Like, think of I called Michael today. I was like, mate, you got any jobs that I should plug? And he does, but they're a bit hush-hush. So... Here's what I can say about some of the gigs they got going on at the moment. If you're listening to the podcast and you happen to work at like big four M&A, so your KPMG, Deloitte, PwC of the world, then like, and you're working in M&A transactions, this applies to you. It also applies to you if you're at an investment bank, like boutique, private equity. They've got a bunch of gigs for people like that who have been working 2 to 5 years in those sort of roles. They got gigs that are in family offices. Talking about business development at multinational, huge mining companies, places that are building out their business development team to work on some pretty substantial transactions.
Family offices, that's like real rich people.
Real rich people. We're talking Rich Lister family offices. There's a couple of them in Perth. So, and they're easy gigs. Like they're good gigs, good work-life balance. You get like, you know, you buy side, so you are like king. They're really interesting gigs. Get in touch with Michael and Zav.
But didn't he just say someone actually rang up and asked him for a CFO gig?
They did. Big fan of the pod. There was someone looking for a CFO in Adelaide, which...
But they do place them in Perth, he said, just not in Adelaide.
Yeah, exactly.
Maddie was right.
I was right. Yeah. Thanks, Trav. Yeah, you missed that part. Now I was actually right. Thank you very much.
Never wrong.
Righto, boys, let's rip into it. Barrick Gold to invest US $2 billion buckaroos into Zambia.
Mate, this is a big one. So we spoke about not too long ago Barrick having a rumoured go at First Quantum, a takeout. So that's pretty big dollars, you know. That was a circa $25 billion supposed deal that didn't end up going through. So what they've decided to do today is invest US $2 billion into their Lumwana mine in the copper belt in Zambia, like you said. So they want to pretty much double production from 125,000 tonnes of copper in FY23, that's what they've guided for, to 240,000 tonnes. At a plant, get this, 50 million tonnes per annum.
Well, I was about to say 240 is bloody 1,000 tonnes of copper. That's a lot of copper.
This is a big scale game. So 36 year mine life, it's huge. And they want to get there by 2028. So Bristow, the CEO, he's met with the leader of Zambia, the president, and they've got all the agreements in place. They've had the asset for a number of years now and they're deciding to scale it up because it actually sits in the second quartile of the cost curve. The all-in sustaining cost is $320 to $350 for this financial year.
US dollars a pound.
That's right. Yeah. And last time I checked, US dollars a pound copper price is $3.58. Right. So what they really want to do is really get their gains in unit costs, bring those unit costs down through economies of scale, essentially just a really, really large-scale operation. And they're clearly bullish copper. We saw that by their little bite at First Quantum. This really emphasises it for me. And we've also seen it in other places. We've seen Newmont buying Newcrest. That is, you know, they've sort of advertised that to a lesser extent as this, but a go into getting more copper in their portfolio. And we haven't seen it as much in Australia. I'm keen to see if we do see it more in the future. You have like Evolution to an extent. They really tend to do it for the appearance of bringing down unit costs. They're not really bringing down their cost. They just can report a lower unit cost. So I do wonder if we'll see it more with the Aussies. You do have the big hurdle of there not being a lot of high quality copper assets in Australia. So that is one of the hurdles for those that want to stay jurisdicted in the Australian jurisdiction. But, you know, who's to know if we see this more in the future? Like there's other assets, Telfer's going to fall off. That'll have some copper credits if people can get it going. We'll see.
It reminds me a little bit. Remember when we saw BHP's CapEx guidance come out and it was so heavily skewed towards their copper investment. Now we're seeing it here with Barrick there. It's a big, big capital commitment towards copper. I wonder, like from a rationale perspective, you said they're clearly bullish copper, and I think that's probably right. But I wonder how much of this is actually driven by trying to position the company's portfolio to be more aligned to what the ESG investors, the shareholders of these companies, are actually demanding of them.
Both, yeah, without both BHP doubt, that's a component.
And Barrick have you know, commodity production that you can call to be, you know, like non-ESG commodities in some way, shape or form. And maybe they're trying to build out the commodity portfolio to represent new world metals, mate, the future-facing commodities.
Agreed. I definitely think that's a component. Mate, let's have a chat about Red. They came out with a pre-quarterly today and, again, another robust quarterly. 55,000 ounces they produced. It was down from the 61,000 that they produced in the June quarter, but they're still on track to meet guidance. It was a good quarter. They had an average head grade of just under 1.5 grams per tonne, and they're running the mill at 5.5 million tonnes per annum. So, you know, not the scale of what we were talking about before, but a big mill operating there. They sold their gold at $2,609 on average per ounce, and they ended the quarter with just under $45 million. They'd started it with just over $45 million, but they did pay back $15 million in debt over the quarter. So all in a pretty good quarter. They'd brought forward $11 million of the $15 million that they'd paid back. So that helps them reduce their net debt position down to about $68 million, so roughly a $14 million improvement. On the surface, looks pretty good. They didn't provide any unit costs, but you can do a bit of rough math and take a few assumptions that they didn't spend on growth capex and the like and work out that they spent roughly $2,300 to mine an ounce per this quarter. So, you know, they've got the hedge
book. Without growth capex, is it?
Yeah, not that's included. One of the assumptions, yeah. Just a rough sort of estimate. So they've obviously got the hedge book. We've spoken about it in the past. You know, it's not helping them out, although it could be worse. Their profit would be kind of double if they didn't have that hedge book, but they did, and they've just got to work their way through it and pay down that debt and get through this period. But, yeah, it's all in, not a bad pre-quarterly that they've provided.
So about another – at that rate, another four quarters to pay the debt if they want to maintain that same cash level at that rate. So what, 68 to go, they've paid $15 million this quarter. Do you think would they want to pay that off all in one go and maintain that cash position, or do you think once it gets lower they'll start staggering it out because they won't be getting hit with as much interest? What's the strategy with companies there?
Well, I see their debt position in a lot of ways is like a huge, like the big overhang and the big risk of the company. So I see them, you know, like accelerating the pay down of that debt as a huge positive, in all honesty. Like it provides some degree of reassurance as a shareholder that they're not going to get caught out by, you know, like negative cash flow in a huge portion of that going towards financing costs because, like them paying that down faster is a positive in my mind.
I don't think in four quarters' time it'll be Red 5.
There you go. Yeah. I think the company had flagged, or perhaps it was Equity Research Reports, that by end of 25, so a bit more than four quarters before they pay down that debt. But we'll see, given that there was a big accelerated component. Yeah, but yeah, I think it's in their interest, and what the investors want to see is that they get rid of the debt and keep producing and get rid of the hedge book hopefully as well.
Well, should we pay? $50, they'll be bought out before they pay the debt off. Shake on it.
I think I agree with you, mate.
Oh, there you go. Oh, that's not a bet then.
Righto. We'll buy each other a car.
Yeah, righto. Yeah, that'll do. Right, Strandline, project update for at their Coburn project, and that's why it's a project update. And also got a speeding ticket.
They
up
did,
16%.
Mate.
What's going on, boys?
Yeah, I mean, up 16%, but if you zoom out the chart a little bit further, it's, you know, not been a great year. They've been getting beaten up quite a bit. We spoke about them in the past. They had a new leadership come in. The exec that took them through the construction of the project is no longer there. And yeah, today's announcement, not too bad, hence they're up. They had their first sale of zircon in concentrate contracted, so it's yet to go out the door. And for a bit of background, they mine the ore pretty shallow. It goes to the wet concentration plant. They recover the heavy minerals. HMC, heavy mineral concentrate, is produced, goes into the mineral separation plant. But that was still being built the last few months, so they were just selling that concentrate previously. Now they're starting to put the thing through the MSP, and that sort of separates the various minerals that they want to on-sell. So today's announcement really saying that they've produced a standard-grade zircon, and they've also produced chloride ilmenite. So they're getting to that end state of where they want to be producing those various mineral sands products that they're going to sell. And now the job is just to really work on the efficiencies. The project hasn't been going so well through various like different issues that they've had. It's not one thing that's just letting them down. The mill hasn't been humming. They've had poor dozer utilization, poor availability in equipment. The tailings we spoke about last time hadn't been going too well because they sort of backfill it in to the ore that they've taken out. So they're really working on getting all of those things humming, Maddie.
Yeah. So how'd they go for the quarter? What'd they get?
So for the quarter, if you sort of add it all in, they produced 30,000 tonnes of HMC. But for steady state, once everything's, you know, up and running, they are meant to be averaging 222,000 tonnes per annum. So they're running at about 55% capacity. And, you know, they were meant to be doing that this quarter. They were meant to be there already, but they had signalled about a quarter ago that that's been pushed back to March of next year. So the market's, you know, not giving them an awful lot of leeway. The share price has come off quite a bit. They did another capital raising. But let's see if they can sort of get there in time.
JD, you were looking at some peers for Australian Lion, and you came across Base Resources. This is a pretty curious peer comp in a lot of ways. Nonetheless, valuation, right?
Mate, we've never spoken about Base, but it's sort of come on the register as we're looking at various mineral sands producers. They're producing similar products to what Strand Lion are hoping to produce. They have the Kwale, I think you pronounce it, operation in Kenya, and they've got they've got various other soon-to-be projects. They've got one in Madagascar that they're looking to get online, but none of them are coming online anytime soon. But like you said, Trav, it was really interesting from a sort of valuation type of perspective. So the company is capped at $190 million roughly in Aussie dollars. They had revenue of US $270 million and EBITDA of US 158. They've got cash of about 150 million Aussie dollars.
Wait, so cash 150, market cap 190.
Yeah.
So it's a 40 million buck EV.
It's pretty,
is that right?
It's pretty standing. They don't have any debt. They do have a rehab that sits on the balance sheet.
Yeah.
But I mean, the numbers look great. So the downside is that they have a relatively short mine life at Kwale. There's a sort of production gap in FY26. They're looking to extend that, and the grades are sort of falling off in the coming years. But like I said, they've got an asset in Madagascar, Toliara, that they're looking to get online. They are waiting for elections at the end of this year for that one to go through. But they're currently trading at 16.5 cents, and get this, they paid last year 6 cents in dividends. So that's a pretty astonishing yield. So the reason I'm talking about them is there could be a kind of pitch like what we saw with Emerald do coming in for the Bullseye asset in the near of Leonora. They could try and diversify their jurisdictional risk, come to Australia and mix it up. That said, you know, the way Strandline's been gone, maybe they're thinking we can get this on the cheap in the future if Strandline keeps going this way and scoop things up. Who's to say? But their cash position is greater than the market cap of Strandline now. So
yeah, and Strandline has a lot of debt in there. There's like NAIF and a Nordic bond in there.
There is.
So yeah,
like over 200 million in debt.
Yeah, so. So if Strandline becomes distressed, then Base, who need a growth project, could be opportunistic. Is that your sort of thoughts?
Yeah, they could be. Head office here in Perth, and just the assets in Africa. So maybe that's the pitch for them to get an asset here. Mate, let's talk about Pantoro.
Yeah, I mean, we just talked about Red 5 and Strandline. I feel like the theme of a lot of the stories we're talking about today are developers during ramp up. And Pantoro fits that category as well. Pantoro, they've come out today with news that's actually sent the stock up about 15% intraday. Their Norseman Gold Project has produced the highest number of ounces and highest grade profile to date in the month of September. So that was 5,352 ounces at about a 2.7 gram per tonne feed grade this month, well, the month of September. Keep in mind, though, the DFS penned Norseman as a plus 100,000 ounce per annum project. So still a ways to go if you annualise the month of September.
And they were meant to be there already? The initial plan?
The DFS and reality are very, very different, which I'll sort of get to.
Yeah.
But seems like these companies have been in ramp up for a long – pretty much when the ounces are below the DFS, they're just still in ramp up.
You're onto something there, Matty.
Yeah, and I mean some context for the listeners unfamiliar with the Norseman project and Pantoro. So, you know, Pantoro, the gold developer, they've been pretty maligned as they've sought to develop and ramp up the Norseman Gold Project. During the construction and ramp-up period, they've had to tap the equity markets a lot more times than you know, investors were anticipating, and this is post being fully funded. They managed to merge with their JV partner, Tulla, which was like a completely logical thing to do.
Previous 50-50 owners.
Yeah, and it should have happened a lot sooner, I think, and the cynic in me kind of suspects the only reason it actually ended up happening was because the underperformance of Norseman sort of drove the consolidation out of necessity because he could do a capital raise off the back of it. I've been plagued by a number of things. The one that stands out above all else to me is the poor grade reconciliation of reserves in their production numbers that they've released to date.
Won't be the last time that's mentioned today or in the coming days.
Reconciliation,
think.
Yeah. Mm. That's an interesting theme to talk about, Matty. Yeah, reconciliation. Because what does it mean? It means, like, do people just need to be doing far more detailed work in the study phase so that you don't have reconciliation issues in production? Anyway, that's another topic for another day.
It's obviously a thing, and it's a thing in gold when you're dealing with veins. You've got a small area, the smearing of high grade over areas where it might be just a concentrated part of high grade, especially when you're in nuggety ore bodies.
Yeah.
Those assumptions that you put into that and the risk factor for that smearing, you get bitten in the ass when you start taking it out of the ground.
Yeah. And the announcement today, don't get me wrong, it's an improvement that things are moving in the right direction for Pantoro, but the company's still in a really precarious situation, I think. I mean, their cash at 30th of June was 43 million Aussie, and then raised $30 million at the time of Diggers and Dealers in August. Remember, there's a term loan of 38 million Aussie equivalent with the Bari priced at SOFR plus 8%, so it's about a 13% interest rate. Check the annual report, and there's $58 million in trade payables at 30 June as well. So while it's great to see operations improving there, what the market really wants to know here is what about the cash, right? So Pantoro, they show this lovely chart in the announcement today of ounces moving up and grade moving up, but nothing on 30 September cash balance. Compare that with the other, you know, pre-quarterly announcements that we've seen come out. So we saw Red 5, you talked about, Westgold, they also put out a pre-quarterly announcement, and both of them report the two most important things to the market, ounces and change in cash. Pantoro report ounces, but they don't tell you the change in cash, which basically leaves, you know, uncertainty in the market about what the unit costs are, and that's kind of the most important thing that the market really wants to know here. I think all eyes, when the quarterly actually does come out, are going to be looking at cash and hoping that bleed has stopped.
Any word on the decline with what's happening at Pantoro, Trav? There's been plenty going around.
Yeah, the word I've heard is that Azure have been mandated. Let's hope like the quarterly to come shows operations generating cash. Otherwise, you know, like is the end game here that they need a savior.
So mandated to look for a buyer.
I don't know. Like defense. You could call it defense. You could call it, find a savior. I don't know.
Fight off that person coming to
depends how you spin it, right? I think the tricky thing for Pantoro though is that the synergies aren't as clear with regional peers. Like you can talk about Red 5 and how many people in Leonora and you can get synergies and all that sort of stuff. It's not as clear cut for Pantoro. Karora are the closest to them. They've got Higginsville, but Karora, they've got their own mill at Higginsville. And like, would they be a buyer? I'm not so sure. Like Karora, they're already a company that have more mills than projects after they acquired Lakewood Mill last year. But rumour is they're keen to be an ASX-listed company themselves. So
yeah, people might be wondering why they haven't heard of Karora. It's because they're not actually listed down here just yet.
So what have they got? They got Higginsville, they got Beta Hunt now.
Yep.
And that Lakewood Mill you said.
Correct, yeah. So three mills, two, I guess, projects. But yeah, I mean, there's Spargos Mine as well, but yeah.
Keep the eyes peeled on that one then, hey?
Yeah, very good. We're on to Tietto again. Maddie. Tietto, bloody, you were running sort of Tietto news for the last couple, JD. I thought I'd step in and figure it all out for myself.
Show
today.
Show it out, it's really
so
done, hey?
We'll see where this goes. Right, so they put out their updated mine plan for the Abidjar gold mine in Cote d'Ivoire. Did I say? Oh, that was pretty good.
You're getting
good.
Close.
That wasn't too bad.
The spelling is atrocious.
Well, you look at – yeah, fuck, the spelling should be right. Look, their share price graph says it all if you look at ramp up and construction to where we are now.
Look at those candlesticks, Matty. You can see
how good
it.
Just are the candle? Look at the volatility. You see, because that gap you wouldn't see there, nah. JD. That pink dot there, that was when they poured their first gold bar. So ever since they've gone into production, it's been a pretty rapid decline. They had a bit of an uptick there, but
For those listening to the podcast, that was in January of this year. About 10 months ago.
Oh yeah, I forgot we do a podcast too. So January, so that was about, oh god, a bit below 85 cents, and now they're sitting at 32 cents. So you got the people are going to what deliver the gold? Deliver the gold. So the MD Matt Wilcox, he was the COO. Brought in 2021 to help construct and deliver the project. He actually come from WAF. He helped, was part of that team that delivered the Sanbrado project for WAF. So, look, with the changes from the 2021 DFS compared to this updated mine plan that we're gonna go through. Not sure if he was given a bit of a hospital pass by the previous team or the DFS it's changed a lot since the DFS. He was, I guess, part of the driving construction and delivery, but the DFS did come out 6 months after he started. So, yeah, not sure. So I guess, look, how the project was funded initially, it's been very, I guess, dilutionary. They initially had a $140 million debt facility from Taurus, but then they did an $85 million share placement, then another $130 million placement to replace the debt facility. Then they did another $49 million placement. And that last $49 million placement was at 58 cents. And now they're back down to 31. So
yeah. To be clear, that debt facility never was used, right?
Yeah, no. Yeah. They did the $130 million Aussie placement was to turn it into a full equity funding and replace the funding.
They talked about themselves as fully funded, but the debt facility, like, you know, by my reading, it was never actually actually a binding debt facility in place. There was Taurus were mandated to provide a debt facility. That's not a debt facility available to you as a company, but they still called themselves fully funded at that point in time, which I would say is not true.
yeah. So yeah. Look, what do you add them up? 179, about 260 odd mil they raised. So it was US 200 mil pre-production capital. So I think it did come in under budget when you convert it, but they raised a lot of equity for it. So they're in terms of they haven't got much debt left now. I think it's probably about 18 million.
No,
US.
That debt came in later because they fully equity funded it, right?
Yeah, so that's what
and
I
that,
meant right
that
now.
Debt, they announced in a recent quarterly that they chucked in a small
working cap
facility.
$25 million, I think it was about 19.
Yeah, they paid a quarter of it off.
Yeah, so they're not in a bad position, but being heavily dilutionary, so a bit to come back from. So, look, key changes from the 2021 DFS to what the updated mine plan is today. So, plant throughput's increased up to 5.5 million tonne from 2025 onwards. So when first production happened at the start of the year, they were forecasting 4.5 million. The DFS was for 4 million tonne. So that's gone up a lot. They haven't attributed any additional capital for this, but it looks like the blending of the oxide and transitional ore is what will increase the throughput because that material is a lot easier to crush. So, and apparently there's going to be some mill tweaks over time. So they've got to try and reach that nameplate five and a half million. Look, it seems to be a full free milling deposit, bit of 101 for the money miners. So they're saying it's 94% recovery. So look, the oxide transitional and fresh rock, they'll all perform the same under cyanide treatment. It's just the mill throughput that will change because the oxide material's much easier to crush than the deeper fresh rock. So hence the increase in the throughput. So look, mine life's reduced from 11 years to 9 years, with there's a tiny bit in year 10. The reserve has, the grade has dropped 7%. The ounces have dropped 7% and the grades dropped from 1.3 to 1.15. So we saw the grade after the poor ramp up grade. They did more infill drilling, which appears to have determined that there is not much gold as dense as they first predicted in the DFS.
Yeah, and that was the gripe that many had. They're like, you haven't done close enough drill spacing. The confidence in the ore body isn't high enough. Not actually there, as you find out later.
And you look at their ramp up grades. March quarter, 0.55 grams per tonne. June quarter, 0.68. July they got one, but and this month they got, I think it was 0.92. So look, the new mine plan is forecasting 170,000 ounces a year at an all-in sustaining cost of US$982 an ounce. But you compare that to the 2021 DFS that they Tiado forecasted, they were going to deliver apparently 260,000 ounces in the first year of production, and then 200,000 ounces per annum for the 6 years after that, or the first 6 years total. And that was supposed to, that first year of production was supposed to be at an all-in sustaining cost of US$651 an ounce. And their expectations at the moment, they're recently forecasted second half of this year, 75,000 to 85,000 ounces at an all-in sustaining cost of midpoint of about $1,250. So pretty much twice the all-in sustaining cost and 60% of the forecast of gold compared to what the DFS said for the first year of production. So very, very different.
Yeah.
And you look at
There's an interesting point there, Matty. Like, one is just in relation to the fact they never went with a debt facility. So debt providers would have been really, really focused on how fast you can repay the debt. So your cash flow in years 1, 2, 3 matter a lot. And maybe lucky that they didn't have a debt facility. If you know,
they'd be in a lot of shit,
a lot of pain. Yeah.
Well, they would have had to have just raised.
Yeah.
Which they've done anyway. So, they look, and the production profiles, and that speaks to this chart here, Trav. Like, you look at what the production profile was initially. Look at how weighted it was towards those first 6 years. Pretty much high grade in getting all the high grade at the start. And then really tape it off at the end, so which suits that debt funding strategy. But the updated mine plan that you can see here, they've smoothed the production profile out to average about 170,000 ounces over a 9 year period. So look, if you look at where that dirt's coming from, to smooth that out, it appears that they've included 25% of inferred material. So 25% of the mine plan is still in the inferred category.
And that's a sort of function of them now deciding to do a 6.25 by 12.5 meter drill spacing program to shore up the rest of the ore body confidence.
Yeah, but it's they don't really specify where it's coming from in this updated mine plan. So you can make the assumption, right, as the high grade drop because the high grade doesn't exist as much anymore now that they've drilled it out, or are they filling the gap with these APG satellite pits that, like, that their reserve grade is 0.77.
So is the concern, Matty, that they've filled these gaps with these inferred parts and that they potentially will find out in the future that they get the same problem which they've had in the last few months, that all those supposedly parts of the chart that they're filled with these inferred resources aren't actually as good as they thought, and maybe the production profile is as sort of lumpy as first anticipated?
Well, I think it depends where it's coming from, because it's, as I said, that APG area, and I'll go over where they are, that's like already 0.77 grams, so it's already a much lower grade. So it's whether that reconciles or not.
There's another interesting thing. I'm looking at the chart where you can see where that inferred fits into the mine plan. And I think ASX has some rules about when you release a study to the market, and if you call it a scoping study or a PFS, there's rules about how much the proportion of your mine plan that's coming from inferred material for it to be allowed to be called a PFS or a scoping study. It's funny because they're in production and they're calling this an updated mine plan. And it's good for the market to know this is now their new base plan. If they came out before this was in production and called it a DFS, it wouldn't be allowed to be called a TFS with that much, that proportion of the mine plan in the inferred category.
I think, and you're obviously required to put those big disclaimers below it to say that the inferred material, yada, yada, yada. We talked about that a lot with the Genesis transaction when they were including a lot of inferred material in the mine plan, but then they had the disclaimers below it.
Yeah.
Like if you look at the picture, look at, so because most of it's coming out of this AG deposit, which is the big fuck off pit right where the mill is, within 1K or so, but then you got these satellite pits, this APG deposit, which are 9 kilometres away, and the reserve grade for there is, you know, as I said, 0.77, so it is much lower grade because there's a bit of a, like, you look, they've got 1.5 million ounces in the mine plan to be mined, but they've only got 1.36 million ounces in reserves. So, and they quote this 25% of inferred material. So look, we don't know. You're assuming with the increased throughput, they're going to need more oxide, more transitional, which means it's more close to surface stuff that's coming out. So you would infer, pardon the pun, that is coming from these other satellite pits because you're going to be mining a lot more of that fresh material. So overall, they just don't show the split of where it's coming from. So they actually did for those standalone areas, they actually did a scoping study last year for a standalone heap leach operation because it's a much lower grade area. It would make sense that it might be amenable to heap leaching, so, and save trucking 0.7 gram dirt 9Ks up to the mill. So it appears now that that's been – it looks like that wasn't mentioned today because that was going to be US $100 million capex for that standalone. But it looks like they're going to try run more tons through the mill, the existing mill, because the all-in sustaining cost has gone up by $150 an ounce US since the DFS. So some of that's due to inflation, obviously. But at the 170,000 ounce per year run rate, that equates to about $25 million increase in OPEX per year. So probably a trade-off. That 4 years would pay for the $100 million heap leach, or we'll just use the mill and pay the higher OPEX. So that's a bit of Matty back of the envelope maths there. So take it with a grain of salt. So look,
sounds intelligent to me, Matty.
Sounds good. So in September they pumped out, they got 10,962 ounces, grading at 0.93. So they're still below that head grade that they're searching of a bit over one. And, you know, when you're on these high tonnage, low grade deposits, 1 to 0.9 is a big deal. If you're not hitting that, when you're on a low grade deposit, you want to be hitting that low grade deposit. That's a significant part of your margin. So, and look, they didn't reach that 5.5 million tonne per annum yet. They've said lower performance due to rain and lack of stockpiles. The lack of stockpiles are a function of the rain by the sounds. Though October is apparently the commencement of the dry season. So let's hope they have a better run. So as 45 million in cash after adding 18 mil this quarter, but this is before the debt repayments for that $25 million facility. So they quoted they had 6.25 paid down in September. So they're going to obviously pay a bit more off that. So I guess what are we looking for next after this quarter and on the coming months, how that inferred material will stack up once it's converted into reserve for the mine plan, though it is a bit further down the road. Obviously wanting to see the better throughput during the dry season to make up for what's happened in the wet season, especially so you can build up some stockpiles so you can get through the wet season period a bit better than they have. And look, if that reserve grade's been dropped to 1.15 and the mill head grade's been dropped to 1.04, you want to see that grade being achieved through the mill, not 0.9s. So really eats into the margins.
Good stuff, Matty.
Yeah, it's interesting, right, because they've got a pretty undermanding market cap now. They've come off a fair way because, you know, what reality was versus what the expectations were.
It's about a third of the MPV of the project.
Yeah, and that's, you know, that's the opportunity if you, like, yeah, you recalibrate your expectations, but are those, like, is reality still – you know, cash generative because these African assets still have low unit costs relative to WA.
A lot of Chinese investment in this as well from those two of those three placements were heavily Chinese invested.
Yeah, Matty, I've got a couple more things I'm looking out for out there. Just keen to wrap up the show with that. The first one is Blackwater and Daunia, a deal announced, but I'm waiting for something there. Things are going pretty quiet, waiting patiently for some news on this front. Of course, there's the Whitehaven M&A activism. You know, the market was sort of getting guided towards something being announced at the end of September, didn't happen. So just I'm very patiently waiting for an update on that front. I'm keen to talk about that deal.
Does it feel imminent or not?
I was thinking about this one in my head, right? And because all the reporting is that Whitehaven's in the box seat, what would I do if I were Whitehaven? Well, they've got their AGM coming up at the end of this month. I'd actually try and extend the timeline. I'd be influencing BHP to extend the timeline to beyond the AGM, so as to avoid any, you know, activism at that AGM, just kick the can down the road a bit longer and you know, just ensure shareholders don't get disgruntled at the AGM first. That's if Whitehaven have influence on the timeline from BHP. I'm not sure if they do or not, but that would be my strategy.
Mm.
The other one I'm really watching out for is the Albemarle Liontown deal update. So Gina appears determined to disrupt the Albemarle, you know, deal on the table with Liontown at the moment.
I think she nearly has more shares than Tim Gordon now.
Yeah, it's staggering, right? She just keeps buying, I'm sure. She's bidding them up. And Albemarle's a few weeks into their DD now. And Joe Lowry, he tweeted about Gina's involvement early today saying, "Dear Gina, can't we all get along?" And he wraps up his thing saying, "I'm sure you get the reference. Maybe an appearance on Money of Mine pod would help." And I agree with Joe on this one, Gina. Our DMs are open. Would love to learn about your lithium ambitions. Come on the podcast.
I'm not putting shoes on if she rocks up. I'm still wearing thongs.
Yeah. I think that'd be okay, man.
We've got a bit on, but as I said before, we've got a bit on. I don't care if you're Gina Reinhart or Chris Elson. You can't just walk in here and think you own the joint. We've got a schedule as well. So
she could buy us out.
She could buy us. Fucking buying everything else, it appears. So anyway, wait and see. Right, cheers to all the partners. JP Search at the top of the show, who are the finance recruitment gurus.
Terra Capital.
Anytime exploration.
In their own field. And
K-Trill and SMEC.
SMEC Power and Technology. Righto, Money Miners. Hoodaroo.
Hoodaroo.
The information contained in this episode of Money of Mine is of general nature only and does not take into account the objectives, financial situation or needs of any particular person. Before making any investment decision, you should consult with your financial advisor and consider how appropriate the advice is to your objectives, financial situation and needs.